Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. This is Scott Reich with Crime Talk, and we have a big docket today. First, Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell, you know, they're filing these motions to dismiss. The prosecutor, not worried at all. He's got one of his own. Second, new information regarding Barry Morphew's whereabouts when his wife went missing. Third, the boyfriend of Breonna Taylor is suing the police. Fourth, Boston cops are charged with theft. A man kills his family for being too loud. An update on that naughty judge in Kentucky. And our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Let's talk about it. Good day, Crime Talk aficionados. My name is Scott Reich. This is Crime Talk. First, if you haven't done so already, hit that subscribe button, hit the like button, and leave me a comment below. Let me know what you think about the topics we talk about today. First on the docket, remember yesterday, Chad Daybell's attorney had filed a motion to dismiss the charges against him because there was insufficient evidence. And I gave an explanation as to why that motion is going to be denied. That's right, denied. Well, guess what? The prosecutor, Mr. Brown, is not concerned about that motion at all. They've met the legal standards. The sufficiency of proof is sufficient to go forward. And a jury will decide whether Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell are guilty of the crimes charged. Now, the prosecutor has filed a motion of his own yesterday, and that was a motion for joinder. Right now, the case against Lori Vallow and Chad Daybell are separate. They have separate case numbers. They were not charged as co-defendants in the same case. Therefore, the court has to grant permission for these cases to be tried together. Now, this is a motion for joinder, to join the two cases together. It makes sense. You have two defendants. The evidence is literally identical as it is to each of the co-defendants. There have been no statements made by either one of the defendants, Lori Vallow or Chad Daybell. Some admissions will come in, but if they establish a conspiracy, these evidence is going to come in together under the hearsay exception for a co-conspirator statement. But there's been no statements pointing the fingers at each other. Therefore, that is why this motion for joinder will be granted. Only if Lori Vallow or Chad Daybell, through their attorney, file motions and state that we have inconsistent defenses. Judge, we can't go to trial together because we're going to be throwing each other under the proverbial bus, and it would be unfair for me to do that basically with the co-defendant sitting next to me. That would be unfair, is what they will argue. Only if there is an affirmative statement by the defense saying we are totally going to throw the other one under the bus, will there be any chance of this motion for joinder not being granted by the court. At least this way, when it's granted, Lori and Chad will be able to spend a little time together. You know, they haven't been able to do that for a while. And this may be the last time for at least the next 10 years or so that they do get to spend that time together. Next on the docket, some new information regarding Barry Morphew. That's right. He's the husband of missing mom, Suzanne Morphew, from Salida, Colorado. She went missing on Mother's Day, May 10th, hasn't been seen from since. Suzanne Morphew was reported missing by her neighbor, a woman by the name of Jean Ritter. She's 70 years old. She called the police, and this was ultimately because both Mallory and Macy, Suzanne Morphew's daughters, were unable to reach her by phone since May 8th. Suzanne Morphew's bike was found the same day on a bridge close to her house, but obviously no sign of Miss Morphew. Now, her husband, Barry, who is, I don't even want to say a person of interest, because he says that he's talked to the police for at least some 30 hours, but according to Suzanne Morphew's brother, he hasn't cooperated with the police and refuses to take any sort of polygraph whatsoever for the police. Barry Morphew has given limited public statements up to this point. One, a quick YouTube video that he put out asking for anyone with information to let them know. And then he's given a statement to a local news agency where he states that the Chaffee County Sheriff's Department are the ones that have screwed things up and that he is truly looking for Suzanne Morphew. Well, there's new information that's come out. Now, Barry Morphew stated that when his wife disappeared, that he was in Denver performing some landscaping work for RTD. Now, RTD is the Regional Transportation District. It's basically the bus company. They're predominantly here in the Denver metro area, but they kind of run buses up and back and forth to Boulder, Fort Collins, Colorado Springs. Well, things get interesting because that same morning that Mr. Morphew said that he had to return to Salida to deal with a family emergency, he called a gentleman by the name of Jeff Puckett, who has worked with him. And Mr. Morphew allegedly told Mr. Puckett, who also lives in Salida, that Barry Morphew had to return to Salida because of a family emergency and to basically come to the hotel where he is staying, which is a Holiday Inn in Broomfield, Colorado. This is just off of the corner of Wadsworth and 120th Avenue, literally just down the street from the Crime Talk offices and literally a stone's throw from the Rocky Mountain Metropolitan Airport where Crime Talk 1 is hangared. Well, when Mr. Puckett arrives, he takes over the room of Barry Morphew. And the first thing that he notices when he gets to the room is that there's lots of towels in here and they're wet. There's some mail. And also that the place really smells like chlorine. Well, through some investigation, it's been confirmed that the manager at the Holiday Inn says they do not use chlorine in the cleaning of rooms, mattress sheets, or their towels in any way. So certainly makes one suspicious why that strong odor of chlorine would be there. It's also been confirmed that the manager has turned over all video recordings to the police during the time that Mr. Morphew was there. Now, the thing that gets really interesting as it relates to Mr. Puckett's arrival to Broomfield to stay in this hotel room was that he thought he was coming down to do work. Well, he stayed in that hotel room for 2 days, never left it because he was never in contact with Barry Morphew, who said, you need to go to this particular location, pick up this equipment, and perform this task. That was never done. There were no tools that were left behind, no instructions other than to basically go to the hotel room and wait. He did so for 2 days, finally returned. Mr. Morphew ultimately paid Mr. Puckett for his time, but neither have spoken since he's been paid. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to try and figure out whether, in fact, someone was maybe creating an alibi, trying to create a situation where maybe they wouldn't question the fact that the guy came down is kind of corroborating your story that I was in Denver. Hey, ask this other guy. He came down. Problem is that guy never did any work. Rather interesting, I must say. We'll have to wait and see how that turns out. But Mr. Morphew also was given basically a conservatorship as it relates to his wife, Suzanne Morphew, so that he could sell the house in Indiana. I wonder if he's going to use those funds to help the search for his missing wife or if he has other plans for those monies. It's definitely getting interesting, and I kind of get the feeling that maybe the walls are starting to close in. Next on the docket, let's take a quick recess. Please go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up for a background subscription service. Everyone should have access to this information. And when you go to crimetalksearch.com and you sign up, you can search as many people, as many names as you want. And the beautiful thing is you get to do it anonymously. And literally, when you type in that name and hit the return button, millions and millions of public records are searched and a report is generated while you wait. And that report is going to include information that correlates with the individual that you're searching and their social media information, any telephone numbers associated with them, any emails associated with that person. You're also going to get information related to any criminal history they may have, any property records, divorce records, bankruptcies, as well as marital records. Is this person actually divorced? Those are the things you want to know and find out. In today's world, you can never be too safe. It's a small fee. Yes, it is, but you can cancel it any time. You will be happy you did. Go to crimetalksearch.com and sign up today. Next on the docket, Breonna Taylor's boyfriend is suing the police and is asking for a declaratory judgment for immunity. That's right. For those of you who do not know or not familiar with the case of Breonna Taylor, let's talk about it. Now, Kenneth Walker was the boyfriend of Breonna Taylor, and he allegedly opened fire at police officers who shot and killed Breonna Taylor when they came into her apartment executing a no-knock search warrant. Now, Mr. Walker was originally charged with attempted murder as well as assault on the police officers. Ultimately, those charges were dismissed when the state attorney general took over the case. Well, Mr. Walker is seeking basically a declaratory judgment from the courts as well as damages related to this entire incident. The declaratory judgment is requesting for the court to find Mr. Walker, who has a license to have the firearm, has no criminal history, to basically say that he was legally standing his ground when somebody came into the property. And he finds it hard to believe that months and months have gone by since obviously March 13th, and no one has been able to determine that the officer who was shot, whether that was a friendly fire bullet or whether that was a shot from Mr. Walker's pistol. Mr. Walker says he shot one round as a warning shot. That's when the other officers returned fire, ultimately killing Ms. Taylor, who was an EMT and was killed in her sleep. Now, these three officers, one of whom has been fired for unrelated misconduct, obtained a search warrant believing that Ms. Taylor's ex-boyfriend was shipping drugs to that address. Not her current boyfriend, the ex-boyfriend. Now, Mr. Walker works for the United States Postal Service, is a law-abiding citizen, and was, in his words, standing his ground. Let's face it, most jurisdictions, you can shoot first, ask questions later if somebody is in your home. Now, obviously, check with your laws in your state before you start doing that, but most states allow you to protect your home. It's called the Castle Doctrine. In the lawsuit, Mr. Walker states that he said, "Who is it?" three times. At no time did the officers ever respond, according to Mr. Walker. And that's when Mr. Walker fired a single shot to scare away the intruder or intruders. But as we all know, that's when the police returned fire, killing Ms. Taylor. We'll see how this turns out. I'm not sure the court is going to go as far as granting him immunity to prevent him from having additional charges filed against him, but I think he's on good ground either way. But that seems more like an issue for the criminal courts. If he is ever charged again, let's hope that is not the case. Next on the docket, six Boston police officers are charged with stealing taxpayers' money through an overtime pay fraud scheme that had gone on for some time. Now, the United States Attorney for the District of Massachusetts, a gentleman by the name of Andrew Lelling, said, "Hey, I support the police, but official misconduct has to be punished. Specifically, he stated, quote, "I am a strong supporter of the police, especially in these difficult times, but all must be treated equally under the law, regardless of wealth, power, or station in life," end quote. And these officers were charged with stealing money year after year through this fraud, where they would state that they were doing additional duties relating to a project that was given federal funds to basically clean up their evidence control unit to make sure that items were purged and that everything that should be there was in fact there. The officers over the course of the years, who are each charged with one count of conspiracy and one count of theft of federal funds, took a total of some $200,000. We've stated this before. We like the police. We like good police. We got to get rid of the bad ones. And we've also said that the rule of law means that everyone is treated equally. And that's what the United States Attorney is stating here. Regardless of your position or job, wealth, power, or station in life, you need to be held accountable. So hats off to the United States Attorney in this particular situation. I'm sure that was a tough call to do anytime a prosecutor goes after a police officer, but the laws apply to everyone. Next on the docket, and we will give this gentleman, if we can call him that, James Lee Webb, the presumption of innocence. Now, James Webb is charged with three counts of murder because he allegedly shot and killed his wife and their two teenage sons. You may ask why he did this. Well, according to the police affidavits, the couple woke up together on Monday. They apparently started arguing about 10 a.m., and Mr. Webb had a headache, and he claimed that the children were being too loud. At some point, he allegedly pulled out a gun, shot his wife at least twice, and then he killed his two sons, 13 and 16. Whereupon Mr. Webb allegedly waited an hour before contacting 911 in what police described as his emergency medical alert device. When the police arrived on scene, he was placed under arrest. He was advised of his Miranda rights because that's when they would be applicable. And Mr. Webb stated to the police, frankly, he was tired of all three of the victims yelling and telling him that there was nothing wrong with him, so he shot them. Those were his words, ladies and gentlemen. Now, Mr. Webb is being held on a $3 million bond. Doesn't look like he's going anywhere fast. Now, certainly no one is going to promote the killing of anyone, but because someone was too loud, you eliminated your entire family. Wow, Mr. Webb. Wow. Next on the docket, do you remember us talking a few months ago about that naughty judge down in Kentucky? That's right, Don Gentry, soon to be former judge, because the Judicial Conduct Commission has held several days of hearings regarding an 8-month investigation as to the allegations regarding the good judge. Now, it was alleged that Judge Gentry forced a court employee to resign so she could hire an alleged sexual partner known as Stephen Penrose, and it was also alleged that she engaged in sexual activity with Mr. Penrose and one of her secretaries inside a courthouse office during work hours and basically allowed Mr. Penrose to play the guitar most of the day, sing in his office, and drink alcoholic beverages. Apparently, even when the judge was working, Mr. Penrose was sending her photographs of his genitalia, crude jokes, and at least several romantic messages, including simulated sexual activity. There was also allegations that Judge Gentry asked her clerks to do work related to her re-election campaign, which obviously is a no-no. That went along with allegations regarding retaliating against people who wouldn't support her re-election campaign by donating money. Well, now the soon-to-be former judge has 10 days to appeal. Otherwise, she is going to be losing her $137,000 a year job based upon this misconduct. The Judicial Commission obviously heard testimony and the hearings went on for several days. They've made their conclusions, findings of fact and conclusions of law. So Ms. Gentry may want to polish up that resume for sure, but this is what happens when we allow politicians to get comfortable in their positions. And in Kentucky, apparently the judges have to run for re-election and have to raise money. But you don't get to engage in hiring your romantic partner to hang out at the office with them. Eventually, people are going to be offended, as well they should be. So, to Judge Gentry, sayonara. Sounds like it's been fun in your office. And finally on the docket, our dumb criminal contestant of the day. Meet Madison Ann Bryant. That's right. She is a young 19-year-old woman who was found in the early morning hours, about 2:20 a.m., sitting in the median of U.S. 27 in Leesburg, which is about 45 miles northwest of Orlando. Now, Miss Bryant explained the reason she was sitting in the median was that she had left her boyfriend's car because they were having relationship issues. Well, her 22-year-old boyfriend was ultimately busted for drunk driving and taken to jail. Miss Bryant also appeared to be heavily intoxicated, but at that point had committed no crimes. As she waited along the side of the road, she stated that she needed to use the bathroom and asked if she could go on the side of the road. The police officer said, "No, don't do that. I'll just drive you down to the gas station and you can use the restroom." Miss Bryant, having none of that, immediately pulled down her pants and urinated directly in front of the police car, gripping the vehicle's push bar as traffic passed by. Upon pulling up her pants, Miss Bryant was arrested for disorderly intoxication. She was promptly placed into the police car, put into the back of the car, where she engaged in light, casual conversation with the officer. Some of that conversation included, "Hey, officer, could I have my Juul vaping pen back so that I can take a hit because I need it for anxiety?" The officer said he couldn't do that, whereupon Miss Bryant asked if the officer was married and perhaps had any children, and stated, quote, "I'm not trying to F that up for you, but basically I'm willing to do just about anything, including perform oral sex on you if I could have that Juul." Clearly, Miss Bryant was in need of some sort of oral gratification. Well, the police officer didn't respond. He continued to drive. And upon arrival at the police station, Miss Madison was charged not only with the disorderly intoxication, but that's right, felony bribery for the illicit officer. And that offer was recorded on the camera in the police car. So, Ms. Bryant, you are our dumb criminal contestant of the day, which leads us to our teachable moment. I have had clients do very similar things where they ask the police officer, by usually waving a fistful of money around, saying, "Is there some way we can make this all just go away?" I've seen a situation where the client asked not once, not twice, but three times. And the officer said, "No, don't do that. Don't do that." And the fourth time, he arrested him for attempting to influence a public official and bribery of a public official. Ladies and gentlemen, don't bribe public officials. That's illegal. So don't do it. Thanks for watching. We'll see you next time on Crime Talk.